The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story. It's the coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Ribicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown, along with the absolutely indispensable Shannon McCurgy. Just a little bit of a shift to start off the night. Noam Chomsky views passivity as the easiest course, but hardly the honorable one. At least that's one message we hopefully got from the South Carolina murders. Some call it a tragedy. The church wasn't cut down by a tornado, so let's use the word that works. Murders. Nine lives were cut down by a racist. Nine lives whose stories had to be told by their loved ones, and some of them didn't have the whole stories. Nine lives, from the young to the old, narratives about graduations, marriages, grandchildren, triumphs and losses, and faith, all completely prematurely. They wanted to know more about their beloved victims, and understandably so, because each of them, like us, is born a blank page, with every episode and morsel of our lives forming our book, our story. We're fed up. As fortified by author Marty Rubens, we can't stare out the window. We must run through the field. But I believe that day changed us. I sense that we might finally feel the urgency to shift, to stop the relentless passiveness we've seemed to accept as part of the American lifestyle. Until that night, we did the same thing as a country: convey anger, demand justice, display sympathy. And then we did what we do best: forget. Until it happens again. And it always happens again. Author Donald Miller asserts, when you live countless stories on which you play a sedentary role, it's an odd feeling to switch stories. Back to stories. And time to change them. Time to change mine. Think about changing yours. I don't pretend to have answers and certainly don't claim to have a clear plan of action. But tonight is a start for me. You know, Walter Cronkite was one of the trusted, most beloved journalists of anyone's time, but I think he was wrong when he said, in seeking truth, you are to get both sides of the story. In the case of Charleston, we need only one. But I sure would have liked to hear the other nine. My guest tonight is exactly what the proverbial doctor ordered: an active artist with stories of the human condition told through the lens of a brilliant photojournalist. Ben Tecumseh DeSoto is a veteran photographer and documentarian of 30 years. He spent most of his career at the Houston Chronicle, capturing the scenes and spectacles of Houston as it grew into a dynamic metropolis. While at the Chronicle, he crafted numerous photo essays that poignantly represented the plight of the homeless. This work was the inspiration that fueled the Understanding Poverty Project, a combination photo exhibit, book, and documentary film that spans three decades of Ben's work covering how urban poverty and public policies impact post-traumatic stress disorders. The photo exhibit debuted at Diverse Works in 2008. His comprehensive presentation was delivered at the Rotunda of Houston City Hall in 2009. We'll learn more about his documentary film project scheduled for production this year in just a few minutes. And right now, currently, Ben is a student at the University of Houston downtown, works as a freelance photographer, and cohort with Houston's Photo Fest Literacy Through Photography Project. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you here. And it's really a very timely program. It is.
Well, thank you.
Because you're an active guy. You know, and the passive compliant position is going away, right? And we're doing it right now. We're doing it right here. Now, why haven't we connected at UHD?
That's a big place.
You don't know how popular I am, apparently. You have no idea. You're supposed to lie. You're supposed to say, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do, but I had to just part the waves to get to your office.
There you go.
But you've been there a long time. But we're glad to have you. And we're going to talk about what you do with our fledgling young students, the ones interested in journalism, in just a little while. I'm intrigued by the Understanding Poverty Project. Give us an example of a way in which urban poverty and public policy impact post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay. The way it... what happens when someone ends up on the street and they're homeless? That is the result of of a long slide down. What we know statistically today that a homeless person, the odds of them having some combination of physical, mental health problems, having they're going to have adverse childhood experience scales, which is something measurable now, that a high level of stress put onto a child in an early age, the longer it is, the more stressful life events, and lacking the what are usually called invisible resources or assets, you know, that family, friends, finances, you right. know.
I don't know if you have this data off the top of your head. I don't mean to put you where are we in the world as far as the number of homeless? How do we rank the United States?
What we had was always had a core, this kind of this PTSD, the Bowery bum, the wino.
Right, right.
Yeah, they were, we've always had that since Civil War in some respects.
Right.
You know, the veterans, a disproportionate number of veterans. We had a Great Depression. You know, back in the 30s, we had this huge collapse and everything fell apart. And then in the early 1980s, we had numbers that we hadn't seen since the Great Depression.
I see.
Yeah. And basically what we have been in, because of practices and policies of government and business that were established in the 1980s, it basically just cut the legs out, cut out the support of people who were barely making it at the very mm-hmm. bottom. And so what we see consistently is that our homeless population, there's a constant production.
Right, it's spiraling up. It is.
Yeah.
It's spiraling up. But how are we in the world? Why we're ranked? Third, fourth, eighth? What do you think? Do we know?
It's really weird. The United States has this huge number of homeless people that a Western industrialized, sophisticated society does not have, because they have a different attitude toward basically they're sick and ill, they're challenged people.
Do we have more than the rest of the world?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
And
part of we are having the federal government under Obama in the last 6 years has taken an approach at homelessness and the nation as a health problem.
Yeah.
And so right now we're employing the housing first model, and pretty much all the coalitions that are public, private, around the country, the coalitions of homeless, are attacking this. There actually is a level of ownership. There's been annual surveys here in Houston, for example,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and it allows us, by kind of naming them, we can receive benefits and we can target and identify these folks. And we actually had a little downticks targeting our veterans. Mm-hmm. Right now they're targeting families here, yet there's some structural problems that are producing, and this what the documentary film is showing, these things that we can structurally are being fixed as we're speaking.
Okay. I wanted to get to your story, Ben.
Sure.
Your dad passed away in 1987, and with that loss, you felt a need to take stock, to dig deep about your own life and the meaning that you want to assign to it. Enter a gentleman by the name of Ben White, the topic of your first story, and it's a narrative that frames a face that we're likely not to forget. Tell us who he is and the story that surrounds him.
Okay. Met Ben White on July 4th, 1988. He had a balloon tied to a shopping cart. And I walked up, introduced myself, and asked if I could take his pictures in the park that day. And we kept in contact, and I felt in Ben someone that I could connect to. And he connected to me and felt comfortable sharing his story. And one of the first things I learned from Ben, as I spent time with him that summer and that fall, that he had a mentor. And that's kind of blew me away. Here I was examining homelessness, made a connection to someone who was living on the streets, and to realize that he had that learning paradigm, that, you know, teacher, he had a student. He learned, there was a Korean War vet named Pops, who in the early 80s had was forced out onto the streets. And by his own reckoning and Ben's reckoning, maybe some 200 men learned how to survive on the streets, you know, in that kind of, what I now describe as like, they were cut off from normal resources and access to resources. And so they were like, if they were living in a rainforest, but they were in an urban jungle. So instead of places to hunt and fish and harvest, they were hanging out, places to get their to sleep, to get their medical care, get their daily needs met, and then in addition get their ID so they can apply for these other things. And so we have this basically been like a 6-mile strip of Main Street. Close to 1,000 people were living at any given time. The numbers dropped a little bit because of the targeting that are living there, because there's policies and programs that are trying to sort deserving and undeserving poor. And Ben, I think, is, you know, it's an incredibly painful situation to find him living an adverse childhood experience score that has basically kind of ruled his life, because the resources there were never there for him. Yeah,
right.
Growing up in Houston's Third Ward.
Yeah. And he's clearly a significant part of this project, and we want to get to the project in just a moment, because it's a great continuation of Betta's life and the other kind of people, Linda and children and folks that are so integral to this plight of the homeless. But we're putting a face to the homeless in these stories, and that's something we haven't done in the past. This is Hank Rubajek and Shannon McCurchy with guest teller Ben DeSoto on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or KPFT.org if you're listening online. But whatever channel you took to get here, we are very glad that you are here. I wanted to go to Shannon for a moment. Shannon posts everything that you want to know about our guests, story events, story festivals, and articles about the history, healing, and hilarity of storytelling and tellers alike, and all on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. So visit us and like us on the way out. Shannon, Augie is going to be with us next week for the 4th of July. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Augie is a second-generation veteran, and he'll tell his father's story of experiencing D-Day. And so this is going to be an interesting way of preserving this history that comes through the family.
Perfect way to celebrate independence. Ben, before we get to your next story, I want to make sure that you're able to tell us about your contact information so we can learn more about your upcoming projects. Tell us your website, email, anything that we need to know, please.
Okay. Website for the project is www.quietstormsreform.com. And then I also have a general kind of work and presentation website at BenDeSotoPhotography.com.
Yeah, and they're terrific websites. Oh, I looked at them both. They are really good. No kidding. They're great. Well, they're visual. You know, they're visual. But you tell stories in visual form, and it's not easy to do that. I have a very good friend who's a photographer who always struggles with explaining to people that photographers tell stories, and you tell some pretty poignant ones, and you're telling one now. And it's sometimes hard to take these pictures in your mind, these images, and put them in verbal form. It's very hard sometimes, but I appreciate these descriptions and these details, and I wanted to move on with this story. The Quiet Storms of Reform hatched from your relationship with Ben.
Yes.
And it's sort of a cluster of mini-narratives, as I would refer to it, formed by you, a master photographer, to convey things that words alone cannot. That's what we're leading up to. Try to put this in story form for us, please.
Sure. The Quiet Storms of Reform is focusing on reforms in our court system, reforms in our healthcare system, and reforms in our foster care system. I looked at these three institutions, was cued to that by Nan Roman of the Coalition for the National Alliance to End Homelessness, in a book they published in 1999 called The Way Home. And she pointed out that these institutions are basically kind of failing our poorest. And with that information and observations about homelessness, working with Ben, another person that I photographed over 30 years, Judy Pruitt, another story, another time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you can go to the website and read more about mm-hmm. about her situation. Again, like Ben, born into poverty, lived in poverty, and without extraordinary injection of resources, will probably die in poverty. And in Judy's case, her daughter and her granddaughter are living in that exact cycle of poverty as well.
Now, Ben is doing what right now? What's
Ben doing right is now? Much healthier, and his is like a happy ending story after pretty much a lot of dead ends with his life. Ben, not having an education, not being able to compete with marginal health, spent most of his time in prison or coming out and back to the streets and back into prison. He basically, that's what his job was for our state, was to overcrowd our prison. He, so in his last year, a year and a half, he was going from a cycle to the hospitals to the streets and back to the hospitals again. Once we got him into the permanent supportive housing program here, he had zero hospitalizations.
Really?
That's huge, huge difference. And just a little bit of help, of managed care. One of the things that we
tried... you told me that earlier. Yeah. I found that staggering.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah. And then it kind of helps us reframe the whole conversation that for Ben, it's not disability and disability assistance. Ben and I spoke about this, is that it's the just whatever help he needs to be able to. There, and it's a really amazing. There's these human lives that we have here that can be meaningful. They can be beneficial. They can be useful to themselves and others with just a little bit of the appropriate help, targeted resources that they would say within the vernacular.
Yeah, we're not doing a whole lot as a society. It's a leading question, I know, but
it's ongoing. It's ongoing.
We're getting better. We're getting a little better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, compared to what we were back in the early 1980s, and you got to realize that by 1988 we had basically two cycles of Reagan. Mm-hmm. You know, landscape had permanently had a present with homeless to the point where churches, counties, and cities were actually building facilities and programs from the ground up to meet not only the existing need of what we had been identified as our Bowery Bum, mm-hmm. the traumatized individual male, but now we had families being turned out on the streets.
How is your project helping the homeless specifically? Because I know that President Obama wanted models of reform, and yours is in some ways a model, an exemplary one. So how's it helping? How's your project helping us?
The three stories I focus in to help exemplify these reforms, a quiet storm, existing, three strikes are out, current system existing. I throw out this fact quite simply. Both in Harris County and Los Angeles County, huge county jails, huge populations. There's more people getting their mental health care medicines in the county jail than they are getting through the free world clinics.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. Yeah, so it shows you that something's really off of kilter. And so for the story that would help highlight what life would have been like for Ben is the Healthcare for the Homeless InReach program. Since 2004, they've been able to show up to a two-thirds reduction in someone's return to prison by meeting their health care needs on the day they walk out the door. And so what I have is my story, our story, because I'm collaborating with folks, is that we're working with Healthcare for the Homeless. We're going to go in reach. We're going to meet a client before he's discharged, interview him, be there the day he's discharged. Have a camera follow him as he's leading out, have a camera meet him, and then follow through healthcare as they get him on his feet, and then follow through with that.
Right.
If this program existed 40 years ago, Ben and thousands like Ben, our prison system, we would have had a different model if this existed 40 years ago.
Ben's a case study. We're watching, walking. How does he feel about being a sample, being a subject? How does he feel about that?
For Ben, it's a way of him giving back. It's already something that he and I have had a conversation with about collaboration, sharing the story. Because, you know, like I said, his great aunt who raised him, Ruth White, raised him in the church. He was actually a youth minister. But the resources there for him to overcome the traumas, that adverse childhood experiences, you know, being an orphan, physical violence, the poverty that he was into. These are all things that would wipe out anyone. It would put anyone from the home to the streets if you didn't have the resources.
In a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
We don't realize it, do we? We don't realize it.
No, not at all. It's too easy to blame the victim or point at some character defect as opposed to look at the reality of the context of that individual character defect is a defect of the family. Yeah. And so, and we tend to all agree that, yes, families, you know, there's a problem with the family. But that's where the divergence comes in our thinking. That some people, how are we going to work with that family?
Yeah.
You know, someone to punish, someone to help.
Yeah, you see, you give the homeless a face through Ben, through Linda, the other person. Yeah, I know, Judy. Different story, different time.
Yes.
We don't want to confuse people, but you're really talking about Ben White, the case study of the night. And we're giving the homeless a face because to most people, it's the guy who's trying to panhandle and get his money at the corner, right? It's the guy we really try to ignore.
Yeah.
That's the face. And we don't realize someone like Ben White is really the majority, isn't it? I mean, he really is the majority of homeless in the sense that his plight is not atypical.
Yeah. And it also reflects that lack of access resource to meet his needs as identified as an orphan, as identified in that poverty, as that fifth grader who was repeating.
Right.
There were all the flags there. That was it's been pretty clear that 99% of any given prison unit would have 99% of their personnel would have high school dropout or have some problems with some of the formal institutions like that. You know,
right.
Their family were, you know, they're up to 2/3 of our teenage runaways, people caught up in our sex trafficking, are runaways, are fallouts of our foster program, if not out and out from our juvenile justice system.
You are listening to guest storyteller Ben DeSoto on So What's Your Story here on Houston's KPFT 90.1 FM. You've been a guest on a lot of shows here, right? You're no newbie here at KPFT. Give us a list of some of the shows. I know Progressive Forum,
Over the years, gosh, my mind's blinking out right now. All I can think of.
I know the feeling, man. I know the feeling. When you get to be a certain age, you have no mind.
Yes, yes. Living Arts. And speaking of that.
Shannon is there doing mime.
Oh,
yeah, she's saying, you know, drawing something and going, Living Arts. You know, showing us a picture of Wally Cleaver. Wally. Stuff like that.
Photographed over the decades, you know, photographed assignments. Ray Hill, I think he still compliments me in saying that the best picture he's ever had was taken by me.
No kidding!
Ray Hill, aren't you? Right, well, at least that's what he tells me to my face, and so I accept that.
Listen, that is okay, man. That is okay. Now, I bet you're dying, Ben, to learn about the best way to learn about storytelling, right? Well, Ben and the rest of the world who has a hankering to hang around the best storytellers around, better listen up because Shannon's going to tell you exactly who they are and when they meet.
Well, Hank, you must be talking about our proud sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, who meet the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center. That's 1475 West Gray.
Thanks, Shannon. I appreciate it. And let me add that we have a new program site at www.sowhatsyourstory.info for updates, photos, and a lot more. Ben, you know, tell us, what have you been doing with some of those fledgling young photographers at UHD, you know, because we don't teach photography, and thank God you're around. But you're doing some stuff with them, aren't you?
I'm taking more classes at U of HD right now, preparing. What I'm doing is...
But aren't you working with some folks
there? Oh, yeah. Through Photo Fest, I'm teaching. I'm also working with some of the street kids that I'm working with right now. I've given them video cameras to photograph and share their stories. So in that role... I started working with Ben and Judy. I also started working as a volunteer at Ripley House and set up
a
neighborhood darkroom.
That is great. You want to be a teacher.
Yes. And so I'm right now working with what I call visual STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So I'm teaching the photography skills, digital filmmaking skills, PowerPoint and Microsoft Word, the package right there, and work with kids. I served a year working at a nonprofit charter school with middle school kids and high school working in technology. And so I'm looking at technology as a digital life skills and being able to, the same ease that a kid could speak and to write. Yeah. I want them to be able to pick up a camera and take a picture that convey their feelings.
Yeah.
I want them to pick up a video camera and write out a script and make a public service announcement and do that with as much ease as
Else. And I appreciate you saying that. I was saying earlier that I have a photographer friend who's always frustrated because people wonder whether or not what he does is really art. It's really human expression, which always puzzles me because there are very few really professional photographers around when you think about it. I mean, it's sort of a dying breed. It's like watchmakers, you know? But in any event, he was telling me the other day, he says, you know, I had this gig doing a photography job for somebody, and then somebody called me up and said, you know, this is their way of saying we're not going to pay, right? This is their way of saying. And he says, you know, we're going to do it ourselves. We're going to take pictures ourselves. And he says to me, and I just get so fed up, I just turn to people and say, fine, take your damn pictures yourself, because they're not the same. They're not the same. Photography is unquestionably a form of art. Now, I'm not telling you something you don't already know. Okay. It's just amazing how so many people don't see it as a skill set that's worth cultivating, or they don't see it as a form of expression. Did your dad tell you stories when you were a kid growing up? Was he a good storyteller? Yeah. I don't know. I just had a feeling that he was sort of a storyteller around,
We were talking with Jacqueline Batiste leading into this.
Jackie,
That people who see me since I'm on radio, but I do look Native American. The way I wear my hair and my father's birth certificate said he was born outside the Alabama Coushatta Indian Reservation. But I have no official credentials. Someone told me that makes me I can be aggravated for all indigenous people, you know. And
yeah, as soon as you said that people think I look Native American, I was going to say this totally accidentally. I was going to say how. So I really stayed away from that one, Ben. But I got it out anyway, right? Yeah, I got it out anyway. I am so sick. You can't listen to me. So you are part Native American Shawnee, you said.
Well, Tecumseh is a Shawnee Indian chief, and my father gave me that name.
Beautiful.
But like I said, nothing official, but I'm indigenous to this area. Yeah. My grandparents, both sides of the family, on my mother's side, Spanish and Indian. Yeah. My father's side, obvious, some type of Indian, but nothing official, you know. And so that sense of identity that comes out of that sense of being a person of color and kind of growing up and kind of that, you know, Siddhartha sitting at the river's edge and watching people go by, you know, that's kind of has been my experience here in Houston. The longest I've lived outside the city has been a 30-day block back a few years back. Yeah.
Ben, this has been great. And I told you it was going to go fast, and it did go fast. They always go fast. They always go too fast. Ben DeSoto, thank you for your undeniable creative energy, your striking wit, enviable persona, really. You're nothing short of remarkable, I think, and a hell of a citizen, and we need you here, and thank goodness you are here. Scooter's up next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 for So What's Your Story, and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Three sad facts. All over the world, more than 80% of forest cover has been lost to deforestation. Topsoil is lost much faster than it's being created. And a half of all species are threatened with extinction, mainly by industrial activity. Until now, for the past 300 million years, about one species was going extinct every 4 years. But now, scientists see one species go extinct every 15 minutes. This environmental destruction can only be changed when you act. Deep Green Resistance says standing up and speaking out is the only hope for our planet. To learn more, visit deepgreenresistance.com.